Hey, this is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett on Empower Radio. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. All of a sudden, I got a frog in my throat. I'm like, okay. That's really helpful. But I think it gives me a little more incentive to be more powerful in my presentation. I need to be, because this guy has got all sorts of stuff coming at him from all different directions. Jim Harold is our guest today, and we're going to talk a little bit more of the paranormal, supernatural element, which I like because I have a lot of that in my life anyway, and it's always fascinating to me as how it seems to crop up in different ways for different people. I get a lot of the light stuff. The majority of my stuff is extremely benevolent and friendly, except when I've done some house cleanings, and then it's more of a those are interesting, just to say the least. It's never one thing. It's always a new thing every time you go in. But Jim Harold does a podcast, and he has a website, jimharold.com, where he just basically investigates all of these extraordinary experiences that people have had. And so I'm glad that he's able to join me today to give us an idea of what all's out there. And it isn't imagination. It's a reality that just some people are accessing in that moment that they can't say, okay, here, show everybody else too. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you today? So glad to be on the program with you and your listeners.
Oh, great. Thank you. You've got the new book out, and it's
yes.
A campfire. So what is it? Does it just include all of the stuff in your podcast and your stories?
Well, a little bit of background about me. I've been podcasting since 2005 on the paranormal, and about 2.5 years ago, I started a show called Jim Harold's Campfire. And basically, that show is dedicated to the idea of people calling in with their true stories, of their brushes with the supernatural. And this book is essentially a compilation of 73 stories, and five which have happened to me and my family, and the rest are gleaned from the program. And that's what you have with Jim Harold's Campfire, True Ghost Stories. That's kind of what the book is in a nutshell. And the fun thing that I like, kind of speaking to what you were talking about, most of these stories were kind of serendipitous. They just happened to people when they were undergoing normal life. They weren't necessarily out ghost hunting or anything like that. There are a couple of those in there. But mainly it was just normal folks going about their life, and then they met up with something.
Yeah, with something. And that's the thing I think that is so telling, is that something, it's not one-stop shopping. It isn't. When people refer to ghosts, everybody has a different term for something that they're experiencing. And we still, I don't think, have a real good grip on all the stuff that's out there to be able to just put it in one neat and tidy category.
Oh, no, I don't. And in fact, to kind of illustrate that point, I started podcasting in 2005 with a program called the Paranormal Podcast, which I continue to do to this day, along with several other podcasts, including Campfire. And I remember when I started, I had this thought, and you'll laugh about this. I thought, this is going to be great. I am going to do this for about 6 months, and I'm going to have all this stuff figured out. I'm going to talk to these authors and these experts, because that's what the format of that particular program is, interviews with authors and experts on the supernatural. And I thought, boy, I'm going to know it all. I'm going to have it all figured out. Well, guess what? 6 years later, I have more questions than ever.
Yes. And that's the way this works. It's incredible. Once you open one door, you're in the room and you see, oh, it's full of more doors. And you open another door there, and it's full of more doors. And it's like, oh, wow,
exactly.
This is fabulous.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. And actually, I'm glad this came up, because I've never thought about this in the interview. But kind of to illustrate this, we talk about everything on my programs, everything from UFOs to ghosts to cryptozoology and strange creatures, everything that could be kind of broadly categorized as paranormal. And, for example, Bigfoot. I've always, first of all, I'm not a big Bigfoot believer, but I think it's within the realm of possibility. Maybe there's some creature out there we haven't discovered yet, but that's the key word, creature. Now, lo and behold, after years of doing this, a guest came on my program and put out the theory that maybe Bigfoot is a visitor from another dimension. I never thought of it. So that's a perfect example where you have something where you would think it's kind of straightforward. Either it's a hoax or it's some kind of creature that's not been discovered. But here somebody throws into the mix something totally different that it's from another dimension. So really, again, it's like Pandora's box. You open it up and, you know, who knows what you'll find.
Okay, now I did post the thing that you did on Amityville, the podcast there,
yes.
And I've had some connections. One of the guys that is in my local area said he grew up in that part of the country, and he said that that whole area is known for different types of weird happenings and weird events, not just that the house. So you interviewed, would you address that? Because that's one that a lot of people are familiar with. The Amityville Horror is a classic. It scares people.
Yes.
Crazy. And so what was the story with this?
Well, I interviewed actually one of the kids from who grew up of the Lutz family, Christopher Quarantino, and he was one of the Lutz kids. He's since changed his name, but
imagine
but anyhow,
that. Yeah.
Yeah. But now I think he was trying to run away from it for a long time and trying to not be associated with it, but things came to such a head, he felt that he had to address it. So essentially, he feels that the story has been misinterpreted, mischaracterized in the media, whether it be books or movies or whatever. He was particularly upset with some of the latest plans for some movies, which he thought totally mischaracterized what really happened. So he's on a quest to say exactly what happened. What's interesting in that program, and I won't totally spoil the surprise, but he tells us exactly why he thinks that that particular house had those issues at that time. Now, of course, we know DeFeo killed his family there. I believe his first name was Anthony DeFeo, and they took over the house. I believe that was his name. I don't have it in front of me.
That sounds right.
Yeah, but it was DeFeo, definitely. It was the last name. And the one young man killed his family, and that's what led to, you know, what happened. But there was something else that Chris said specifically led to the Lutz family experiencing this phenomena. And he claims that no other family since them have experienced the first thing. And he felt that the whole tenor of the thing has been mischaracterized over the years. So he's out to set that straight. And I would invite your listeners to listen to that program. That's at jimharold.com, JimHarold.com. And that's free, and there are over 380 shows there for free that they can listen to archived. Everything from UFOs to ghosts to premonitions to dreams, that's a great place to go. Plus, we have a video weekly paranormal news show, so it's a lot of fun.
Okay, I also have it's Ronald DeFeo Jr.
Oh,
I went ahead and looked it up real quick just to make sure.
You.
Well, for people who are
Thank
Googling
you.
And, you know, some of these names is like you get part of them because there's so many when you're doing this kinds of research that sometimes they all run together. But the Amityville Horror Challenge is what your guest is putting up right
promoting,
now.
He's going to be doing a pay-per-view where he and I guess some of the other members of the family tell their spookiest story. So that's what he was promoting, but it was a fascinating discussion, and I'm not associated with that project, but he did come on my program to promote it, and I thought it was fascinating, and you could tell in his voice that all these years, I mean, we're talking like 1974, which is, my goodness, that's 30-some years ago, and you could tell in his voice that it still bothers him. That the experience still bothers him, and everything that happens still bothers him. And it's interesting because there's a parallel to my campfire stories that are featured in the book and also on the podcast of the same name. In that, one of the more common things that I have when people call up and tell their stories is that they'll be 30, 40, 50 years old, and they will specifically tell a tale from their childhood. And you can tell how much that impacted them. Either it frightened them, or it impacted them. Sometimes it can be positive, you know, some kind of interaction with a past loved one or something like that. So sometimes it can be very poignant and very beneficial. And sometimes it can just be something that scares the devil out of them 20, 30, 40 years later.
Well, there was one thing I did, I can't remember. It's been in the last couple of years. We went out to a place that had been extremely active, and the people who lived in the house were trying to sell it. It wasn't going to sell because everybody knew the history of the house. It's in the middle of Kansas, so it's not, you know, big on the high list if I want to acquire property here. But the problem was that the family was still incredibly just polarized about how they wanted to deal with the house. And not only that, the people who had been frightened as children were still dealing with that. So when I went in to help clean the space and move that through, the little girl who'd been in the room and had seen some of these very, very frightening things was able to go into the house since it had no electricity, able to go in the dark. She and her father went into the space and make peace with what had been going on. It was a misinterpretation, basically, of what was happening. She was frightened. Nobody knew what to say. The only thing they knew was to, you know, treat it like it was something big and mean and awful. The fact that it had that it glowed was also scary. But after going in and addressing what was going on, it was basically a guardian energy for some of the garbage that was in the house. The house had a history of that had one of the people who was in the house at that point was a doctor. And so a lot of things happened at that time that were very, very unpleasant. And so the memories and all the stuff that was happening in that house. And then there was another person who was there who was at later on put into the state insane asylum at that time. So I didn't know any of this. I told them that, and then they got the documents out that said that this was what's going on. When I go in, it's as an intuitive. I don't get the background. I just rely on what's given to me, and then it either pans out or it doesn't. But when we got that information and that could corroborate their own knowing, then she went into the house, and when she came out, she didn't, the fear went away. It was understanding. And when they went in, they said it just felt more, there was a love. There was like all this stuff was released. And so for me, hearing these people tell their stories with you, it's like they really need another element that might give them some closure into understanding. Some of the stuff we are tremendously frightened of isn't always because it's meant to be scary. It's because we don't have a clue. And when it confronts us, security.
Right. The old say, through a veil seen darkly, people don't realize what they're dealing with many times. So I think there probably is a bias towards assuming it's bad. And then many times, you know, the things will happen that are very positive. An example that's in the book, if we have a moment.
Yeah.
Is a granddaughter. She, a young girl, probably in her late teens, was working for her family at the family car lot. And her job was to go. And this is actually in the book. This is Love is Like a Butterfly. And she was working in a car lot, and her job was to go check the cars to make sure they hadn't been tampered with during the evening or so forth. So she'd do that every morning. She was on her appointed rounds one morning, and she went and she looked, and she was checking all the cars and found a dead butterfly on her on the ground. And for some reason, she picked it up, and she started crying inconsolably. She walks back into the offices and showed it to her mother, and her mother was trying to console her and couldn't console her, and all of a sudden they got a call that her grandfather had been rushed to the hospital. Well, he had been undergoing some health challenges, but there was nothing really imminent or anything that they thought would lead to anything really bad in the situation. But the mother said, well, you know, settle down, honey, you stay here. I'm going to go check on your grandfather. Well, unfortunately, shortly after that, they got the word that he did pass away. So the granddaughter was very, very upset. She ran home. She ran to her room, closed the door, and was inconsolable. And after a while, she decided to leave and go for a drive. So she said she drove and she drove and she drove, and she didn't really know where she was driving to. And she just ended up at this park. And she didn't even know where, she said she still doesn't know where it's at, and she'd lived in the area her whole life. She came to a park bench and sat down by, I guess, kind of a pond. All of a sudden, all of these butterflies swarmed upon her, 15 to 20 butterflies in her hair, all around her specifically. She'd never seen so many butterflies in her life in one place. And she says to her, that was closure. She felt much better about things, and she thought that that was her grandfather trying to get a message to her, that he loved her and that she was okay. And the thing about it is that even to this day, she says, in the wintertime even, she's having a rough day, she'll look out the window, she'll see a butterfly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, those I think are phenomenal. They're phenomenal, and they can happen.
Oh, yes, I believe that. I believe that signs can come from our loved ones on the other side. And again, to your point earlier, even though these are campfire stories, they don't always have to be negative or scary.
Well, and this time of year, though, a lot of people are into the scare factor. So, and I'm sure, that's the challenge on your show for people who are calling in is just say, okay, I'm going to stump you with this one.
Well, they usually stump me. I mean, I'll give you one that's not in the book, but that was recent, which I thought was great. There was this woman, she's probably, I'm guessing, in her early 40s, and her mom passed away when she was very young, about 12 years old, sad, passed away of cancer. And there are four or five different things, components to the story, but one of the first thing is that there was a particular dresser with a mirror that her mom had, and even though it's been in three different houses, many times family members will report going by that mirror when it's dark and seeing her mom, but seeing her in the prime of life, feeling good, looking good, and smiling, which is a neat story in and of itself, but that's it just starting. In later years, the woman's son was very young, 4, 5, 6 years old, somewhere in that range, and she heard him upstairs talking to someone. But there was no one else upstairs, so she walked up and talked to him and said, honey, who you talking to? And like, oh, I'm talking to my other sissy. And this was a person from the South, so that's an affectionate term obviously used in the South. Talking to my other sissy. They actually called his aunt his sissy. So she thought, oh, it's an imaginary friend. He's playing like he has another aunt. That's very cute and everything. So a little while later, few days later or whatever, she was on the porch with her sister, his sissy, and they were looking through pictures, and they came upon a picture of their late mother. Little boy comes up, points at the picture, and says, oh, there's my other sissy, the dead one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that, that gave me chills. But there's a little bit more to the story, although that was particularly poignant. It turned out that one night, this woman and her husband were talking, about their daughter and where did she get her, shape of her eyes from? And they couldn't figure out because it didn't look like his eyes, didn't look exactly like her eyes. So she had been reading a book, I believe, on the paranormal actually, that night, and she opened up and a picture was there of her mother. And that picture looked like a picture that she had put in a cedar chest that she had bought and hadn't opened since she'd put the picture in it. It had been weeks. So finally she got the courage to go and check that cedar chest that had not been opened since she put the picture in. The picture was gone. Somehow, mysteriously, the picture had transferred from the cedar chest to the book. She thought it was a sign from her mom saying, well, of course, the shape of the eyes, look at my eyes. They match it perfectly. And they did. So that seems like a woman who really has a mainline to her daughter and wants to let her know, I'm still here, and I'm going to make
absolutely
myself known.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, she's doing everything she possibly can in her own way to make her presence known.
Yeah, and I think that's important because the thing that I've learned and this experience I had with my late brother that's in the book, I think that we have this feeling that when loved ones are going to communicate with us, that they're necessarily going to materialize like Casper the ghost. And I think that loved ones can use many different pathways to communicate to us, not just the obvious.
Yeah. It also depends on our receptivity because there's some people, I mean, I didn't know I could make a connection for somebody until lo and behold, it happened. And I'm like, oh, wow, that was interesting. There was a psychic I had, Rosemary Altea, who I can't remember the name of her book. It has a feather or something. That's her spirit guardian. But she was saying there's somebody who's around you. And she kept saying, Anne. Well, what happened was the spirit who was talking to her was trying to get the name. And it was Di Anne. She couldn't pick up the first. She said, Anne, because that was what was so okay. So I go home and am doing something, and then I give the information about this person to a friend, and she says, well, yeah, that's, you need to talk to her sister. So I gave her sister information. And the thing is that we're so closeted about this stuff, and especially this was about maybe 15 years ago, that when I gave them the information, they said, yes, that's right. And please let us know if you have any more information, but call the friend. They didn't want me to have the phone line because I was nuts. I got the information, but I was a nutcase. And so it was like, hey, I didn't ask for this, but it was just that deal of, that stigma still is that, well, we can't do this. This is something, but it's natural. And since then I've done all sorts of other things, but it's natural. And until we accept that part of ourselves, we're going to be really stuck working in a vacuum and pretending we don't know anything.
Oh, I agree. And here's one of my favorite things, even when you're talking, in the course of my daily life, I'll be talking to people who may not be familiar with the programs or what I do in this regard. And I'll mention it to them, and they'll kind of look at me funny. And the sentence will go something like this. Well, I don't believe in that stuff, but there was this one time. Almost everybody has a there was this one time. Now, maybe some people have there was this third, fourth, and fifth time, too. But I think even the most entrenched skeptic, when the lights are out, and they're telling the truth to themselves, will admit that something strange has happened to them that they can't explain. And I think that's part of the appeal of something like Campfire, telling each other stories, because it's so universal, isn't it? We've all had spooky things happen to us, strange things, unexplicable things happen to us that we don't quite understand.
Well, and you give people a forum where it's okay. There's nobody here going to be looking at you like you're a Looney Tune. It's like, hey, see, this happened to me too. I'm legit. We are together in this. And so I think that, that in itself gives people a warm welcome or, at least a happy welcome, Matt.
No, I agree with you. And the thing about the program is when I started, my main reason for starting is like, oh, won't this be fun? But actually, I was wrong. I mean, yes, there are fun elements to it, but it was way more cathartic for people, and it meant more to people than I ever understood when I started it. I mean, I've had people say, all these years I thought I was crazy, or people thought I was crazy, and this has made me deal with whatever thing that it was or happening that it was. And again, I don't claim to be a counselor or psychologist or anything like that. I always say I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV, radio, or podcasts. But I do think there is something cathartic about having a forum like this, where people can come on and know that it's going to be a non-judgmental situation. And I might ask some questions, but I'm not going to be, well, come on. I'm going to be very accepting and listen to what they have to say. But because far be it from me, I wasn't there. I didn't experience it, so I don't know what they confronted. So I take them at face value and let them share their experience.
Well, and that's the thing, too. Some of this stuff, and unless you have a way of going through and making sure it's all legit, if everybody's giving you the solid story, then it's all, we're just sharing our stories. My thing is, I've had so many experiences in helping people work through some of this, or working through places that are difficult for people to live in because of the activity and because it affects them all. It affects their dreams. One lady had a local antique store, and during the course of events, her mother died, but there were things going on in that store that were beginning to affect her teenage daughter, who was spending a lot of time there. And there was nothing I could do except say, this isn't a good environment. It isn't going to change, because they kept bringing their stuff in and they kept bringing the antiques in, and it just was, continuing to compound. She sold the shop. It's gone through two or three changes. I've gone by it since then. It's not an easy place for anybody to be in who has to call it a residence or a workplace. That kind of stuff goes on. And, until you really have an up close and personal encounter with some of that stuff, you could say, it doesn't exist. And, I that's great. It may not for you, but the people who have to go through it need some course of action, some support, some way of saying, okay, I'm not going to let this take over my life. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, it absolutely makes sense. I know we're coming upon a break here shortly, but after the bottom of the hour, I want to share what I call the spookiest story in the campfire with you. I thought it was pretty wild myself.
Oh, yay. I love it. I love it. Okay, so we're talking with Jim Harreld. You can check out all of the stuff at jimharreld.com. The best of paranormal audio and video on demand. It's all right here. And we'll come back with that spooky thing here next on Conscious Living and Power Radio.
All right, class, let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all of these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him at the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Wow, awesome.
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah. We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ag Council.
Hi, Dad.
Hey, sweetheart. Where's the little guy? In school?
Yep, just dropped him off. Is your hair getting whiter, or is that paint?
Actually, I'm painting your old room.
Did you take down my David Cassidy posters?
Nah. I painted over them.
Dad.
Just kidding.
Why were you painting my old room?
You had a purple room.
Moby Grape.
Well, your mom and I are upsizing. We're hosting a foreign exchange student from Cairo.
What about me and your grandson?
Come on, it'll be a great experience for everybody.
We'll never see you. You'll be taking her to the museum and the zoo and...
Sweetheart, you know how great it'll be for my grandson to experience another culture. He could learn another language, new customs.
I never thought of that. Got an extra paintbrush?
The time is now. Open up your life. Find out how to have a foreign exchange student live with you. Every family has something special to share. Go to hoststudents.org. That's hoststudents.org.
Imagine.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hi there. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett, Empower Radio. Thanks for joining us. Glad you had time. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, hope you're having a great day, evening, night. I hate putting in time with it. All right. We were promised something really spooky. JimHarreld.com. That's the source of our information right now. Jim Harreld is here. And he also has a new book. You can check it out if you want some more spooky stuff. This is a scary, scary, scary one, right? Jim Harreld's Campfire, True Ghost Stories. Let us have it.
Yeah, well, this is one that's kind of short but sweet. I really like this story, and I'd actually be interested in getting your opinion on it because it kind of gets into a controversial subject, that of Ouija board. And the subject of our story was a young lady. She was a teenager, and she was having a sleepover with a friend, as many teenage kids will do. And, you know, they were playing games and different things, and then they pulled out the Ouija board. And they were talking to the Ouija board, and they were saying various incantations, and they asked it for a sign. Now, they had the lights down kind of low to set the mood and make it super spooky, but they did have a light. In fact, one of those lava lamps, if your listeners remember those old lava lamps, they were real popular back in the day. Then they came back a few years ago, and I think they've disappeared back into the closet again. But
I've got one.
Well, there you go. So
yeah,
they had a lava lamp. If you remember those lava lamps, or now I know you will, because you've got one. It had that gloop in the middle. So anyway, just setting that stage. So they asked the board for a sign. If you're here, give us a sign. And I believe our storyteller was named Leanne, and Leanne kind of looked out of the corner of her eye, and her friend started to look at this lava lamp. The gloopy stuff started to form into something. It formed, and it looked like a face. But then it didn't just look like a normal face. It looked like the face of what they call the devil. And not only did it look like a devil, it looked like it was angry. And it was growling at them with teeth bared. And I think after that, they put up the Ouija board. I think that scared them sufficiently. I mean, I know that's a short story, but I just love that story. And I would actually be interested in your opinion on Ouija boards, because it's been going back and forth on my social networks, and some people saying, oh, the devil's work, and other people saying, you know, it's like anything else. If you misuse it, it can open a bad place, or it can be innocuous. What are your thoughts on it?
I don't have one, and I won't. But the thing is, if you are conscious of what you are thinking and what you are connecting with, and the fact that you may not always know exactly what you're connecting with, then you really don't give it a window to attach to in your home. Even people who know what they're doing have instances where there will be some connection that they really don't need that just shows up because there's an opportunity. And there's so much opportunity with Ouija boards to bring in things that we just really aren't in any way, shape, or form prepared to deal with.
Right.
I think for me, because I work with energy too, and I have my lava lamp is a very interesting lava lamp. It doesn't do the little bits and pieces. It always maintains a nice solid blob. As soon as it just goes into that, and it won't do all big, and it, for me, because that represents the circle of connection that we are all connected, and it insists it has to be a blob. I just thought that. So, you know, it's so funny that you say that. And I also think what happened with them was that they wanted something. They were looking for something, you know, like the boogeyman. And so it just gave them a wonderful representation of what they were expecting. And oh my gosh, that's enough, because that's what they needed. They needed a little, you know, a little shaking, and they got it.
Well, my listener said maybe it was something that was playful and was playing around with them, kind of saying, you want to see a devil? Here's a devil for you.
Yeah. So, I just think it was a big, it was a funny. I think it was because, and I see that with the people who go on these ghost busting tours and stuff like that, they're basically out kicking the tires and they don't know what they're kicking. Or you show yourself, blah, blah, blah. It's like, hey, kids, we're not invisible. You just can't see. And so if you can't see, then you really need to develop that before you come hunting.
Right. And we get into a lot of other stuff in the book. I mean, there is some UFO, there's some dreams, there's some premonitions. Actually, one of my favorite stories in the book is a premonition story, and it actually parallels one that I have as well. But this one, my listener, she was from Canada, and that's a great thing about the book. There are tons of stories from all over the world, actually, in there. And this listener was from Canada, and she was visiting Hungary, where her family was originally from. And she got in at about 2 o'clock in the morning. She was staying at kind of an old apartment building, and her relative had driven her and her young husband to the place. And they were paying the man, and they showed him the room, and all of a sudden, she says, you know, these beds here, this bed needs to be moved across the room. And she didn't know why she was asking this, but she pointedly asked it. And this is heavy European furniture that's probably decades old. It's not like the $39.99 bed frame you get from Supermart. So anyway, they said, no, we're not going to move this. This is 2 o'clock in the morning. Come on. Even her husband was saying, honey, we're not going to move this. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Come on. Everybody's exhausted. And she said, no, I insist that it's moved over here by the other bed. So they go back and forth, and finally they move it. So they go to sleep. And a couple of hours later, they're sound asleep, and they're awoken to this huge crash. And they have no idea what it is because all the lights are out. They're thinking almost it was so disruptive and so violent that maybe somebody drove into the apartment building with a car. So the husband gets out of bed, he's stepping through glass, turns on a light, turns out there was a huge bookshelf with glass and tons of heavy books that had fallen over exactly where that bed that was moved would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, what is interesting here is this woman came into this place for absolutely no reason, no logical reason, insisted that that bed be moved. And then it was moved, and it saved her life. And what was even more interesting to me was the proprietor said, the next morning he said, I've been around this place for years and years and years, you know, 40, 50, 60 years. This was my family's place. That bookshelf's been exactly where it was for as long as anybody can remember, and it never budged. I don't know. Is that a guardian angel of some type? Is that a guarding spirit? Is it just maybe subconsciously she was picking up on the bookshelf being wobbly, perhaps? I don't know what it is, but it's definitely
It's a little bit of both. I mean, at least for me, what I've experienced is that she's working with her own connection, her own intuition, and she's got people around her who are doubting. And so in a way of making it more real for the people who are around her and will stop doubting her, her guides, her spiritual companions are getting a word to them without saying anything, but just making a very dramatic performance of, okay, let her be who she is because she might have a clue.
Interesting.
And to me, it was a very dramatic way and an opportune way of making a point so they could back off and let her be right sometimes. Obviously, they moved the bed. You know, the bed got moved. So they were saying, okay, fine, you know, you're a nutcase, but we're still going to do this. That's what
right.
I run into with a lot of people. You know, there are people around them saying, it can't happen. You don't know what you're talking about. And yet they continue to get this stuff. And it's really difficult to put it out there when you've got a cadre of people around you going, uh-uh. And then this happens and they have to say, okay, maybe this is happening and maybe we'll allow you to have your reality because it sure kept us from being hurt.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that. I had almost exactly the same story that personally happened to me. I'll make it quick, but I was walking with a young lady and we were walking along and we came from one of those big logging trucks and one of us went to the right and one of us went to the left. And all of a sudden, I got the feeling I need to get away from this truck. And this is in the book. And and then I walked past it. Nothing happens. I'm like, oh, I was just imagining. I looked back. Every log on the truck fell off exactly where I was walking. And that's one of my personal stories in the book, of which there are a few. And to me, I always thought that was something protective, but maybe based on what you're saying there, maybe it was somebody telling me, listen to your inner self, listen to your intuition, because you're not as clueless as you think you might be. I don't know.
Yes. It's a way of getting information to us that we don't have any other channel that is open. And I wanted to ask you, too, you got into this. What was your biggest, what has been, I mean, that's a huge experience, but in before getting this all up and running, what was the inspiration?
Well, the inspiration was, and there are a couple of stories in there from my dad, which we don't have time to go into, but a couple of true life stories. And he is a very salt of the earth guy, blue collar guy. And he told me these stories from a young age. And I was always fascinated with the paranormal, In Search Of, and that old great old program with Leonard Nimoy and so forth. I was always fascinated by it. And in 2005, when I decided I wanted to start podcasting, I said, I want to do something on something I'm really, really interested in. And I thought about the first place I go when I go to a bookstore, a library. Where's the first place I go? I always gravitate towards that paranormal section. So I was on a search for answers, and what I found are questions, but it's so interesting finding those questions and asking.
Absolutely. And we do have to let you go. So I want to talk with you again, though. I think you've got a wonderful venue here for people who are looking for validation that some of this stuff goes on and it doesn't have a neat and tidy answer. It isn't supposed to. We're supposed to learn. That's the carrot for all of this stuff, is to give us a little incentive to maybe, you know, throw back the curtain and say, what's here? It isn't all negative. A lot of it is extremely supportive and positive, and we can't find it if we're too frightened to go outside of our own little confining box of this is reality. Reality is a lot bigger. It's even better.
Yeah, I agree, and I thank you for the opportunity to come on. I'd like to invite all your listeners. They can go to jimharold.com. That's J-I-M-H-A-R-O-L-D. They can listen to over 380 shows there for absolutely free, going back 6 years also. There's a link at the top campfire sign-up if they want to come on the show and share their stories. They can click on that, and all the details will be there. And, of course, I would love it if they could pick up a copy of Jim Harold's Campfire True Ghost Stories. You'll find it at jimharold.com, amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, and fine bookstores everywhere.
Okay, and Jim, I tell you what, you're going to be writing a series, okay? You're going to be writing a series, so just get yourself ready because there's going to be Campfire Ghost Stories 2, 3.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. I've been hoping for that, so thank you for that validation.
Yeah, well, I think it's just a no-brainer, okay, because there's so much of this stuff out there, and it's nice to have a way to share, and share, you know, in a way that you feel appreciated by the other people who are going through the same thing you are, all right? So thanks for talking with us today. Again, I'd like to make another connection, maybe when we have some more time to, you know, give you a chance to share some of the other things that you've encountered with your listeners. I appreciate you for doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to our next chat.
All right. We're going to wrap up with Jim Harold. He has a time crunch. Imagine that. And so I'll tell you about my experience with the Stanley Hotel, because that, for me, was a surprise in a nice way that I hadn't anticipated. But you can find out more about Jim Harold. Just go to his website, jimharold.com. And when this stuff started for me, it wasn't that anything that I had planned. As a matter of fact, it took me out of my neat and tidy world that where everything was secure and I knew the answers and I knew where I was going and I knew what was expected and what goals in life were supposed to be. It threw me for a loop. And the thing about that, though, was all of a sudden other things started to make sense. Things that were important to me, like what is there besides going to work and earning a paycheck? What do you do at the end of the day? Is there something bigger here? And why can't we explain things like God, things like miracles, religion, all those kinds of things, because I had a very secure in my world connection with that. There was when I was 11, about that age. I can't give you a pinpoint because I didn't write it down. But at that point, I had an experience with a girlfriend where she said she was doing her thing of representing what we were taught at that time through the church, witnessing, which is telling somebody your story and having them share. And so she was saying, well, do you believe in the Holy Ghost? Have you been saved? And do you believe in the Holy Ghost? And I thought, well, of course. I said, yes. You know, that was just like, huh? And at that point in my life, I had this tremendous glowing come over me, and this in wonderful, beautiful feeling of just being warm from head to toe, and I called it a glowworm experience. When I tried to share that with her, it frightened her. And at this point, I don't even know if she would remember it, because it was one of those things that we never had the conversation again. I assumed, and that's the reason I told her, that she was going through the same thing, that she had it. But it was a catalyst for me, knowing that I had all of these experiences, and for me, that they were real, no matter what anybody else said, that this was my reality. And at the same time, I still ran away from it. I still put it on the back burner because it didn't factor into my everyday life. And I never considered myself psychic. I don't. The best I can say is that I'm intuitive, and that some of these things happen. Some of them are just potentials. And if it resonates for you, then if you go see a psychic and you put your life out there and ask them to affirm it, then you can validate anything that they tell you. And so you're really in a vulnerable position when you do those kinds of things. And it's a much more proactive, creative, intuitive, empowering position to know that at any time, whatever information you are given, you have the right to say, that won't be my reality. I can do something different and shift it. That's my experience. Okay, yours is going to be what works for you. But when I went to the Stanley Hotel, I hadn't done any research. I knew that it was the basis for the movie The Shining with Stephen King, and it was a Jack Nicholson. I'd seen it years ago. And so I purposely didn't really want to go to the Stanley Hotel in Colorado. because, you know, here's this place that's supposed to be haunted, and I really don't need to go there. I believe in ghosts. I've had them around me, and that's just peachy. So what happened at that point was that I went with a friend, and we were in a position of just going through, making a tour. I didn't take the ghost tour, so I went in the house, and he's trying to give me plenty of space to do my thing. And I kept picking up, the minute we got there, of this singing. And I'm thinking, okay, they're singing. And I couldn't quite figure out, but it was just really perky, happy music. And later on, I figured out it's music from the 40s, kind of big band, ballroom type stuff. But as I go in there, then I go to they've got a guest place, and they tell me he's got to make a trip. And I say, okay, well, the bathroom is here down, and it's exactly where it is. But the ghost told me that's where it was. And then I got a feeling about the music, and I thought, well, it's the woman of the house. And it turns out Miss Stanley has a piano there. And one of the people, the tour guides who was working, was actually connecting with her, and she was helping him at the piano. Basically, what she wanted to do was play her own stuff, and she would allow him to play and work with him to play. But when he was done, she would say, okay, that's enough. It was just really amazing, a fun little thing that I wouldn't have known if I hadn't had this intuitive connection. So when I leave, I finally get these perky little ghosts who are singing a little thing. And it's Bubbles in the Wine. That's the song that they're giving to me. Good night, sleep tight, till we meet again. Pleasant dreams, whatever. But it's till we meet again. And so they were saying that there is no ending. There's only beginnings. There are transitions, and we go on. And, but it was that beautiful little perk of knowing that all the garbage that had been out there about how freaky, scary, crazy, bad that some of this stuff might have been was just that. It wasn't a reality, and it certainly wasn't mine. So I wrote about it and put it in the American Chronicle, put it into two or three other places. And I didn't get an endorsement from the Stanley Hotel. I didn't want one. It was just my experience as a traveling guest somewhere. But these experiences that we have are real. They are our own history, our own way of engaging with that which is around us at all times that we just can't see. And for whatever reason, some can see different aspects of it. So when people see angels, they're viewing and they're tuning into that aspect. When people see something they determine to be a demon or a negative entity, then they're viewing that aspect. And in order to give yourself a better view, you have to continually pay attention to your own thoughts and what you are projecting, because reality will project it right back at you. So when he was talking, Jim Harold, when we were talking earlier about the Ouija board, the girls were, as he said, incantations. Lovely. Okay, that's exactly what you want to do with a Ouija board. Is draw out the dark element. So then the Ouija board gave her, the two of them, an opportunity to see, oh yeah, here's the spooky face. But those are, that for me does indeed transpire. When people are asking for certain things, then they will bring them on themselves, and whatever energy is in that space that can help accommodate that, it's just fulfilling a need. It's saying, okay, cool, you ordered this, well then this is what we're going to do. But there are also other times when there are messengers, there's divine intervention, there are things beyond our ability to understand that will come in and help us. And I had that happen when I was, again, a teenager. We were in a space that was isolated, a girlfriend and I, and there were some guys who came down and said that they were going to go visit my uncle. I didn't know where he was. I assumed he was back at the end of the pasture, and told him, yeah, go there. But I got an immediate out loud thing, a voice telling me to run. And we were swimming. We were swimming in a creek at that point. I lived out in the farm. And so I immediately know something's wrong. And I start running. I tell my friend to run. She's looking at me like I'm joking, I'm playing. And I said, now, get out. So we we run and she follows me thinking this must be a joke, and because I don't have time to explain anything. All I have time to do is get the heck out of there. We go up, and this is a grove where there are several cabins that are out and they're isolated. Nobody's there. It's off tourist season. So I hide behind a cabin. And of course, this is the spooky Halloween moment where they come driving. And of course, she has to sneeze or cough. And I'm like, I will absolutely deck you if you can't shut up. But because of the nerves, you know, unfortunately, it's a big enough place where the little cough is under, you know, hidden. But we watch them slowly drive through this grove area trying to figure out where we went. The thing is, I knew the place like the back of my hand. I wasn't in any danger at that point. But it let me know that without any doubt that for me, there is that connection that can be present when we need it. When we are in over our head, then there is something else available. So these experiences for me, and there are more, there are so many more, that it's a way of, once you allow that this is a part of your life and that these elements are there, then they can step in more powerful and visible ways. But it isn't a, you know, here's somebody standing right in front of you. It's usually, it's by giving you little messages, like when he said the woman who had the picture in the book that couldn't have been there because she put the picture in a cedar chest, and it was packed away. It couldn't have done that. Well, that's where couldn't all of a sudden becomes unexplained. Unexplained. We really don't know what is possible. We're learning a lot of that. And a lot of these experiences that we have aren't necessarily all they're cracked up to be in some of the stories in the Hollywood movies that say this is reality. That's a dramatization. Again, just beginning to get an idea that there are so many more potentials and possibilities in our reality of making connections with other beings and other conscious forms of life that we're going to have to learn about. And the only way we can learn about them is to share our stories. And that's why people, to me, like Jim Harold, are doing a great service, because they allow people to tell their stories. Yeah, some may be, you know, fabricated. But for the most part, when people are sharing these kinds of things, it's because they need validation. It's because they need somebody else out there who's gone through the same thing, who can say, I know what you're talking about. I see this. I have seen it. One thing I did learn was not to disconnect anybody else's or discredit or disavow or devalue anybody else's experience with reality, because I have learned that reality can take many shapes, forms, and ways of being that we don't have answers for. So you just learn to be more open-minded, let people give you their reality. If it's something that's extremely dysfunctional and keeping them from living and being okay with themselves and everything else, then there would be a need for intervention. And like I said, with the woman who had the antique store, it was interfering the energy there. The thing is that there were some people who would come in, they'd see a little boy at the counter. Usually children were the ones who had this. They would see a little boy at the counter and the child would say, well, why is he here? What is he doing? And the adults couldn't see anything. So it's that kind of stuff when the kids are saying, hey, there's something here. And the adults are going, no, there isn't. Well, the adults need to pay attention. There's something there for the child. So pay attention to that. Well, there were more things like that going on, and they were not very happy instances. And the woman was having health issues, and the daughter was really becoming much more emotional and it just had a lot of things that would imply that there's a lot of energy there that's interfering with just their daily lives. So she did sell the place, and that was a necessary thing. So when those kinds of things start interfering with your normal routine, your way of just going about your life, and they're interfering with that, then there's a reason for intervention. There's a reason for somebody to come in and say, okay, either you need to move, or let's address and see what, is there a message? Is there something here that needs help? Is there a reason that this is element is trying to get your attention? Most of the time, we will have an opportunity to make connection when somebody close to us has crossed over, because that's when that little window is open and they're right there front and center, able to say, hey, there's more to this. It isn't an ending. It's a transition. And I need to show you this. And so they'll do that. And they may stick around. They may not. Everything is according to what you are doing in this particular lifetime. It isn't a cookie cutter kind of process. It's a, we each learn as we go. So I appreciate your time. I appreciate you listening. And I hope that wherever you are, that you will just give it the benefit of a doubt. There's always something here that can help us if we allow it to help us and we see it in the highest good, the highest light. That's why I think, we always say, think the best thoughts, because that's what comes back to you if you allow it. Have a wonderful day. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett, and I appreciate you for listening to Empower Radio.